Welcome back to the Warren County Radio Bible School, and today we have our special feature in which we read from the Rockcliffe Review, the bulletin we pass out for those who attend the services at the meeting house at Rockcliffe on Sunday mornings. Now, often in this bulletin, it supplements the sermon, but this was a sermon in which I was absent. Yet I went ahead and prepared a bulletin article, and often when I'm absent and prepare a bulletin article, I like to draw something from history, particularly church history. And so that's what I did in this article. The title of this article is The Primal Church and This Unworthy Right Hand. Let me read this to you. In a copy of the History of the Disciples of Christ in Illinois by Nathaniel Haynes, published in 1918, I came across this quote attributed to Tennyson. Step by step, with voices crying right and left, I have climbed my way back to the primal church and stand within the porch, and Christ is with me. I searched and found these words in Tennyson's drama, Queen Mary. Tennyson put these words in lines to be spoken by the actor playing Thomas Cranmer. The exact and complete stanza is as follows. Step after step, though many voices crying right and left, I have climbed back into the primal church, and stand within the porch, and Christ with me. My flight were such a scandal to the faith, the downfall of so many simple souls, I dare not leave my post. Tennyson would later have Cranmer say, Oh, higher, holier, earlier, purer church, I have found thee, and will not leave thee any more. Let me give these words context. During the reign of King Henry VIII, Thomas Cranmer was appointed as the first Protestant Archbishop of Canterbury. This was the highest position in the English church, but for that of the king himself. In those days, a separation of church and state was tantamount to treason. This was a political position and a political appointment. Thomas Cranmer realized this. Cranmer had toured Europe and had been in contact with European reformers. From his political position, he pragmatically tried to initiate reforms in the English church to bring its doctrine and practice closer to that which the reformers in Europe were preaching. He was only marginally successful, but Henry died, and Henry's son, Edward, became king. King Edward was much more in favor of the Reformation than his father. Under Edward's rule, Cranmer was more successful in instituting reforms, but alas, Edward's reign was short. He died young, and his sister Mary ascended to the throne. Queen Mary was Catholic, and she wanted her English church to be Catholic with her. So many of Henry's and Edward's churchmen were executed by Queen Mary that she came to be called Bloody Mary. Thomas Cranmer was encouraged to flee, but he feared his flight would weaken the resolve of those seeking the primal church, so he remained at his post until arrested and imprisoned. He was told that if he would recant and become Catholic, then his life would be spared. Alone and in prison, Cranmer himself weakened. Against his conscience, he signed the papers of recantation that had been prepared for him. Then he was told he would also have to make a public confession of his departure from and return to the Catholic faith. When he stood in the pulpit for this public confession, it was his courage that returned. Rather than recant his reform, he recanted his recantation. He knew this would mean his execution. Nevertheless, he boldly said, Forasmuch as my hand hath offended, writing contrary to my heart, therefore my hand shall be first punished. For when I come to the fire, it shall be burned first. And as for the Pope, I refuse him as Christ's enemy and Antichrist with all his false doctrines." Cranmer was taken from the pulpit and tied to the stake. As the flames reached him, he stretched out his hand into the fire and died, saying over and over, "This unworthy right hand, this unworthy right hand." Cranmer believed he had arrived at the parts of the primal church. To his credit, he recognized the primal church is the standard and pattern for the church to emulate. The church we read about in the New Testament is the higher, holier, earlier, purer church that Cranmer sought. That is the church we should seek today. Well, that's from the Rockcliffe Review. And I read from the Rockcliffe Review because the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rockcliffe, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And now, for the rest of the class today, we're going to go look at this Sunday school lesson the E.A. Elam prepared for the Sunday schools of May the 8th, 1927, about Peter and the risen Lord. It is a part of a series of lessons he prepared about the life and letters of the Apostle Peter. Now, in this about Peter and the risen Lord, we have some helps and hints for the teachers. And that's what I'll read to you now. After Jesus' body had been placed in the tomb, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate and said, "Sirs, we remember that the deceiver said while he was yet alive, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' Command therefore that the sepulchre be made sure until the third day, lest haply the disciples come and steal him away, and say unto the people, 'He is risen from the dead,' and the last error will be worse than the first." Pilate granted them a Roman guard, and they went and made the sepulchre sure, sealing the stone, the guard being with them. You may want to read about that in Matthew 27, verses 62 through 66. All depends upon the resurrection of Jesus. On this rests the whole Christian system. If he be not the Son of God, he was an impostor and blasphemer, as the Jews charged. But if he rose from the dead, he's all he claimed to be. The Jews took every necessary precaution to prevent any imposter here, but God overruled this precaution to subserve the cause of Christ and to furnish the fullest possible evidence of his resurrection. But did he rise? Study history. Examine and weigh the testimony concerning numerous historic events and see if any facts can be found in the history of mankind that is proven by fuller testimony and better evidence than the resurrection of Jesus. The resurrection of Jesus is the crowning argument in favor of his divine sonship. He was declared to be the Son of God with power according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead, Romans 1 and verse 4. The chief point in all the apostles' preaching is to prove that Jesus of Nazareth, whom the Jews crucified, arose from the dead and is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And this all must be believed in order to be saved. Let's look back at the text for this lesson and consider these explanatory notes. John chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. "Now on the first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene early, while it was yet dark, unto the tomb, and seeth the stone taken away from the tomb. She runneth therefore, and cometh to Simon Peter and the other disciples whom Jesus loved, and said unto them, 'They've taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we know not where they have laid him. John mentions Mary only of the women who visited the tomb of Jesus on that memorial day of the week, because she was the one who ran back to inform himself and Peter of the empty tomb, and the one about whom he wished to write. The other writers mention the other women who were there, Mary Magdalene, namely Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Joseph, and Salome, Joanna, and others. They followed the body of Jesus to the tomb, and in their great love for him sat over against the sepulchre, while Joseph and Nicodemus buried him. They returned and prepared spices and ointments. On the Sabbath day they rested according to the commandment, Luke 23 and verse 56. Jesus kept the Sabbath in the grave, and his disciples would not break it even to anoint his body. Mark 16:1 says they brought spices that they might come and anoint him. Every preparation was made for an early start on Sunday morning, the first day of the week. Matthew 28:1 says, "Now late on the Sabbath day as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week." Mark 16:1-2 says, "When the Sabbath was past, very early on the first day of the week, they come to the tomb when the sun was risen." The verse of our lesson says, "Early, while it was yet dark, they started early and reached the tomb at sunrise." They went probably from Jerusalem or perhaps from Bethany. All this shows they were not expecting him to rise from the dead, and strengthens the evidence that he did rise. These women were not aware of the guard and the sealing of the tomb by Jesus' rulers, and their great concern was, "Who shall roll away the stone from the door of the tomb?" This stone was exceeding great, Mark 16:3-4. God overcame this difficulty by causing an earthquake and sending an angel to remove the stone. At the first sight of the empty tomb, Mary ran back to report to Peter and John that the Lord's body had been removed, and these women knew not where to find it. Mary's expression, "We do not know where they have laid him," shows that others there with her, there were others there with her while she was gone. The angel appeared unto the other women. Now we read about Peter and John coming to the tomb. In John chapter 20, verses 3 through 9, "Peter therefore went forth, and the other disciple, and they went toward the tomb. And they ran both together, and the other disciple outran Peter, and came first to the tomb, and stooping, looking in, he seeth the linen clothes lying, that entered he not in. Simon Peter therefore also cometh following him, and entered into the tomb, and beholdeth the linen clothes lying, and the napkin that was upon his head, not lying with the linen clothes, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then entered in therefore the other disciple also, who came first to the tomb, and he saw and believed. For as yet they knew not the scripture that he must rise from the dead. So the disciples went away into their own home." Peter and John were greatly concerned over the fact stated by Mary, and hastened with all speed to the place. John outran Peter and reached the tomb first. Stooping down, he looked in and saw the linen clothes in which Jesus had been buried lying empty in the tomb. Yet entered he not in. Peter, bolder and more impulsive, past John, entered at once into the tomb and found the linen clothes carefully folded and lying in one place, and the head napkin rolled up in a place by itself. John then entered, following Peter's example. Upon him first gleamed the thought that Jesus was risen from the dead, for he saw and he believed, for as yet they knew not the scriptures that he must rise again from the dead. Well, these accounts of the witnesses of the resurrection are so important, and it is upon these accounts that our faith rests.